Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Monday, March the 27th. As we like to do on Mondays, we'll be, Monday, March the 27th. As we like to do on Mondays, we'll be chatting with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Lots of things going on in the country, but obviously a terrible thing happened this morning in Tennessee at a school. We'll be talking a little bit about that, and of course the situation in New York with the district attorney. Has anybody seen Senator Fetterman, Trump versus DeSantis? A very interesting situation. Speaking of DeSantis, he just passed school choice in Florida, and that's a big one. That's a huge victory for the governor. And the main focus today that I want to maintain here with Bill is foreign policy. I have not seen the world so crazy, frankly, in a long time. I got to go back to the last year of the Carter administration to remember such a crazy situation. So let us say hello to our friend Bill Katz. Bill, welcome. It's a beautiful day, but a terrible thing in Tennessee, to say the least.
A terrible thing. And, you know, what really enrages me, aside from the obvious fact of the act itself, killing of five innocent human beings, it's the reaction of the news media. Once again, they go into this, not all by any means, but some, into this, it must be the guns, it must be something else, it must be somebody from another planet. Never the person who pulled the trigger.
Right.
Never the person who pulled the trigger. I mean, if you saw a more perfect example of how not to run a public institution, you saw it today. The church apparently, and of course we always wish them well, but they apparently had no protection of any kind.
Right.
And how long is it going to finally take us as a nation to understand that the way you deal with a situation like this is the first thing you do is to protect the lives of
right.
potential victims? And that's the one thing many institutions don't do. We protect banks and jewelry stores better than we protect children.
You know, Bill, I'm glad you brought this up. Before I make I follow up on your point, the press secretary apparently today did what you're saying they do. She's blaming assault weapons and the Republicans who apparently want to put these machine guns, I guess, in the hands of people to kill children. I mean, it is obscene. She didn't quite put it that way. I exaggerated a bit, but you know what I mean. You know, the assault weapons. But when I heard about this incident, and I heard that this a woman, I guess, 28-year-old woman is all we know, went in the side door, that was my first reaction too, Bill. I was saying to myself, have we not learned any lessons from what happened in Uvalde a year ago or whatever it was? In Uvalde, the guy with the gun came in the side door. And I would have thought that by now every school in the country had a policy that there would be no open doors. I mean, if I'm sending kids to school, you know, they're going to have to guarantee me that the doors are closed before my kids go back to school, Bill.
Of course.
The idea that somebody can walk into a school, I don't care what gun he or she has, doesn't really matter. If you walk in with a handgun, you can kill people. And
yes.
The idea that somebody can walk in and the door is open, it's just beyond me. And I will say one more thing, Bill. I got to salute the police. They did a heck of a good job in how they reacted and handled this, again, compared to Uvalde a year ago. But it just that's the part that just hit me between the eyes. Nobody was for kids. And then the door is open, Bill. That's beyond me. Now, I don't know. Maybe I'm being unfair. Maybe this is a church as well as a school. I know that our church, the doors are closed in the off hours. You cannot walk into our church through a side door or when the kids are in that school, Bill. So you know, that's the part that really hurts, that this could have been avoided had the doors been locked, Bill.
Yes, well, it could be avoided by providing protection that we know exists. That we, I mean, 50% of the schools in the United States today are protected in some way, or hardened, as they say. They will have either a buzzer system, an alert system, a means of locking down the school from a central location. There are many, many things that can be done, none of them particularly expensive, by the way. And it is always ridiculed. Well, if you put a policeman in the school, his gun might traumatize people. Yeah, right. They've never seen the kids have never seen a policeman with a gun before. I mean, there is always some excuse. The excuses are coming from the political left, whose basic philosophy of life is you're not going to do anything in this country without our permission, and you have to do it our way. I remember when Rudolph Giuliani and Michael Bloomberg were so successful in lowering the crime rate in New York. The reaction of the political left was weird. It was just weird. Instead of saying, congratulations, wonderful, wonderful, we have many lives being saved. Oh, no. The first reaction was, well, it was really the people in the communities that did it. They rose up against the drug dealers. And then that was the first game that was played. And then people realized there was not one incident they could think of. The second game that was played was, well, it's really happening all over the country, so New York is not really an example. That was Jesse Jackson. I remember him saying that. It's happening everywhere. New York is not unusual. Well, somebody noticed the fact that it was only happening in New York, that the crime rates in many other cities, including especially Chicago, were going up. New York's was going down. So that one was scrapped. And then finally, the political left, in New York at least, settled on the line that, well, it is happening, but it's turning New York into a fascist city. Actually said that. And it's just, I think we're at wit's end already, that obvious strategies, obvious techniques are available and are not being used.
Right. Well, again, you know, I go back to my reaction. When I heard about this, there was a door open.
Yes.
You know, I just said to myself, I mean, that this could have been avoided, just like Uvalde could have been avoided.
Of course.
Not that somebody wants to kill. That part you cannot avoid. I understand that. But if there's somebody out there who wants to kill and my kids are inside a school, you know what? I want the encounter to be outside of the school. I want the police officer to meet the shooter outside the school, because outside the school, you're not going to have kids killed. I mean, I guess unless they're outside, but most of the time they're inside. That's the thing that just absolutely floored me. And I was trying to find on the internet, on the iPhone, the comments by the press secretary today, because again, you know, as I said a few minutes ago, instead of saying, you know, this is not a time for politics, let's think about the family. No, this is hopefully, she said, and I'm paraphrasing, hopefully the Republicans will now pass assault weapon legislation so we can end, you know, we can never again have this incident. Yeah, right, exactly. You're going to pass a law that does away with this, Bill?
Yeah, well, you know, they will not be satisfied until they take away the gun of every law-abiding citizen. The crime rate will not go down. The suicide rate might go down a little bit, but the crime rate won't go down. And they'll say, well, the Republicans were too late to agree to this, and of course we really don't expect much of a result. You know, guns have triggers. Somebody has to pull the trigger to make the gun go off.
That's
there
right.
There is never any attention paid until somebody will discover that, well, this person got the gun despite the presence of background checks. Well, it's
right.
It's easy to get a gun. There was a horrible tragedy in Norway about 10 years ago. I don't believe you can own a gun in Norway, but 65 children, you may remember it, were killed.
Yes,
65 children. And nobody in the Norwegian government was punished for the lack of protection that those kids endured that day. I mean, they were on an island at a political lecture, of all things, and there were no cops there. There was no protection of any kind. One police helicopter was available. Its crew was on vacation, and they never replaced them, and yet nobody was punished. Unless the left can find a political reason to do something, they don't do it.
Right. Well, what's fascinating, Bill, is that we just had two shootings, school shootings here in the Dallas area last week. One resulted in a death and the other one in an injury. But in both cases, they were 17-year-olds who shot. One case, a 17-year-old actually brought the gun to the school or to the parking lot and killed the person in the parking lot. In the other case, a couple of kids in an automobile shot from the automobile and injured another student in the parking lot. So they never got the guns inside the school because we've got some pretty decent security here in the schools, but they, nevertheless, they committed the crime. And of course, you know, well, we have to pass a new law. Well, we've already broken. I mean, he was not supposed to bring a gun to school, so that's one law he's already broken. They're not supposed to try to kill with a gun. That's another law. You're not supposed to shoot from a car. That's another law. And then, of course, you've got two guns here that cannot be owned by a minor. So you've got a couple of adults out there who own these guns. Either they didn't know that the guns were taken or they were irresponsible. But nobody wants to talk about that. They just want to somehow pass a magical piece of legislation that's going to end everything, Bill. And that ain't going to happen.
Of course. Look, people simply will not deal with real issues and real solutions until it benefits them. If you take, for example, the education system, my God, how many more warnings do we need to know that the education system in America is breaking down? There was a story recently that some number, and I don't recall the exact number, so I'll be general about it, of schools in Chicago do not have a single student reading at grade level, not a single student. You think that would be a horror story, that it would be discussed everywhere, that whoever runs that pathetic city would be at a microphone immediately demanding extra help. It barely was noticed. It's kind of expected. And since the teachers union won't benefit from any solution, they weren't even interested.
No, they'll just go on strike like they're doing in L.A. right now, I guess. They're
LA,
going on
right.
strike. And the schools are a mess. They're not succeeding in any way, shape, or form. They're graduating kids who cannot read and write, but they're going to go on strike because I guess they need a raise. I don't know. But there was a very interesting article or editorial that came out in the Dallas Morning News the day after one of these two shootings. And, you know, they basically said, look, if we're not willing to look at the culture that is producing these children.
Of course.
We're not willing to look at what they're learning and, you know, what we're teaching them about the value of human life. I thought that was a very interesting comment, but the value of human life. If we're not willing to look at them and all we want to do is talk about guns, well, I guess we're going to have a lot more of these terrible incidents, Bill, because, you know, these things did not happen before. I mean, I don't remember things. I mean, I never came home from school and saw my mother in front of a television saying that there was a shooting in the school I went to or in the community. These things are fairly recent, these school shootings.
Yes.
So something has gone off. Something has gone off track. And it's not the Second Amendment, I guarantee you that.
No, I mean, what has gone off is the fact that obviously we have psychological issues, social issues in our population. I mean, we still have not come to terms with the enormity of the damage done to young people by the closing of schools during the pandemic, which we now know is completely excessive and not necessary. They don't want to talk too much about that because it's not in keeping with the party line. And the other things being that we live in a society, as you talked about culture, it's primarily culture in certain communities, but in all communities, there is a little bit of this violent, irresponsible culture That may have a great deal to do with our lack of values. Look at the survey that just came out a few days ago, that Americans are less patriotic than they ever have been, that they are not involved with their religion to the degree that they used to be, that they really don't have lasting values. The education system is not set up to teach what used to be called the American way. It has its results after a while.
I think you're exactly right. It does. And, you know, we're graduating more and more young people who, frankly, not all of them, I want to be fair, and obviously not all of them, but even if it's only 10%, that's a real problem, because look at the damage that they can do. But when a young woman, and this is apparently a young woman in Tennessee, goes into a school and to kill, what, you know, there's obviously something wrong with this young woman that she would do something like this. Or when a young man takes a gun to the school to settle a difference with another student, this is a lot bigger than guns. I mean, that's just my point. And I, you know, I just hope that all I can tell you, Bill, is that if I had a kid in school right now, I would not send him to the school until they could guarantee me that the doors were closed. I thought this issue was settled before, and apparently not. This poor school, maybe they were trustworthy. I don't know. It was a nice community from what I understand. I mean, after all, who would walk into a Christian school and shoot kids? Well, we just found out today that somebody does.
Yes, we don't know who the woman is. I suspect, I can only suspect, I have no evidence, that she probably was somebody they knew. Because you would wonder who would go in and start shooting children at a Christian school. I expect that announcement to be made. But we're going to have more of these things. The crime rates in many of our cities are going up. In New York City, the murder rate has gone down, but the overall crime rate, including violent assaults, has gone up. And you can't solve a problem until you admit that it exists. And what you said about culture is absolutely true. There are cultures that simply cannot seem to function in the modern world, in which case the culture has to be changed. I think it was perfectly evident to in the immigrant generation and then in subsequent generations of people who came here legally as immigrants. Many of them came from very violent countries. Many of them came from countries that were very poor. And they knew that when they came here, they had to learn English. They had to get a job. They had to help support the family. They had values. And that doesn't mean everything was wonderful. It was not. Organized crime was rampant in immigrant communities. But there was a different attitude than exists today. Today, the issue is, we have a problem. You solve it for us.
Right.
In those days, there were no social programs. If there was a problem, you solved it for yourself.
Right. Well, the other thing, too, I think the attitude today is, we have a problem, and only Obama can fix it.
Yes.
That's the other thing. Or only the liberal Democrats have the answers.
Well, of course.
I think what's going on. But terrible, terrible tragedy. There's another tragedy, too, Bill. One more point about this. Up in Denver, where apparently somebody went in and killed adults in this case. But there you see one. They took the guards or the police out of the schools.
Yes.
And so what did they expect? That the criminals were going to change because the police was not there? I mean, is that how naive these people are, Bill?
Well, they are. They took the guards out of the schools because somebody told them to do it, because some college professor came up with this idiotic idea that if you take the police out of the schools, the children won't feel traumatized. Well, the fact is, every survey has shown that when there are police in schools, the children feel better protected, which is logical. I mean, you know, but these phony solutions, these left-wing solutions, aren't based on any evidence. They're based on ideology.
Right.
And that is
exactly
what happens when you let ideology run a country. We're an idealistic nation. We're not an ideological nation. It's one of the things that made America strong, that the solution to a problem was the best solution we could find. It was Fiorello LaGuardia, the great mayor of New York, who once said, there's no Democratic or Republican way to pick up the garbage. And people like that, because he said, I will get the best people. But when you have a situation that we have today, when a man last week who was appointed to be head of the FAA had to withdraw his nomination when it was shown he had no qualifications. You ask, how was he nominated in the first place?
Right.
I mean, what we're talking about an agency that deals with air safety, with human lives. This was not a bad man. He wasn't an evil man. But he passed the race test, and apparently that was the only test that there was. They wanted to appoint people of a particular background. You can't run things, and I would imagine, by the way, that most people in minority groups understand that and agree with it. I mean, I very rarely do you hear any ordinary black citizen, for example, say, well, the person who has that job must be a black woman or a black man. It's coming mostly from the leftist groups.
The white liberals.
Yes.
The white liberals. That's where it comes from. The white liberals. That's where a lot of that stuff comes from. This man nominated for the FAA, Senator Cruz, was asking him basic questions. He had no clue.
Yes.
I mean, had no idea about anything, and he's being nominated for the Federal Aviation Administration, right? That's what the FAA, stands for.
I think it's Federal Aviation Agency, but I'm not
exactly,
sure.
I'll
look it up.
It's one of the A's is aviation. That's all I remember.
Yes, yes.
Wanted to ask you, what is the latest that you know of, since you're in New York, about the Trump versus the DA Bragg? Because it looks to me, for those of us in the outside, is that the DA has sort of hit the wall with this investigation. Do you still feel that's the way it's going to be?
I don't know. The stuff that's coming out, presumably from reasonable sources, is that the grand jury is very frustrated. They met today. I think they then adjourned, didn't come up with any answer. The last thing we heard from presumably informed sources was that there was a lot of dissension in the DA's office, that many of the lawyers feel there was really no case here and that they'll just make fools of themselves, but that the DA is insisting on going ahead. He's a very politicized DA. He's a product of George Soros, which shouldn't shock anybody, and they regard these offices as political offices. So they may go ahead. The point has been made, though, that this is the least of the cases against Trump. It may fail. I don't know who's on the grand jury. The grand jury may not indict. If there is a trial and he's convicted, which requires a unanimous verdict, chances are it'll be overturned on appeal. But there are other cases that most of the lawyers I've seen interviewed on television say are more serious. As we look ahead in the 2024 race, the presidential race, at some point, this can really hurt Trump. I mean, right now people say, well, it'll probably help him because it's a foolish case and the people will come to his aid. That only lasts for a while. If they get him on a real charge and indict him, I don't see how he can complete a presidential run.
Yeah, well,
there's nothing illegal about it, but
right.
I think how can a party nominate an indicted man?
Well, and that's the foolish thing about pursuing this particular indictment, because it's the weakest of the three that are out there. There's Georgia, and I guess January 6th is the other one. But this one is the weakest. But by pursuing this indictment, you're feeding the perception that many people have that there's two tiers of justice, you know, that somehow what applies to Trump doesn't apply to everybody else or vice versa. Professor Dershowitz has just written a book called Get Trump, and I was listening to him on the radio this morning, and he was saying, you know, this case is so bad that it's just horrible. He's never seen a worse case or a weaker case than this, and he's asking the DA to drop it, Bill. Just drop it. Move on. Just drop the case and forget about it. Maybe that's what will happen. But, you know, again, these prosecutors, they're not – this is not what they're supposed to do. They're not supposed to look for the – you know, identify a man and then – you know, look for the crime. It's supposed to be the other way around, Bill. You
well,
got
that's,
crime,
that's the old
look for.
The, yes.
Yeah, but here's
that's
the other thing
Soviet,
too. That,
it's the old Soviet from quote from Lavrentiy Beria: "Give me the man, and I will show you the crime."
Exactly. But here's a man too, and I've got to think that there are people in the grand jury who look at it the way I'm about to express, and that is that they look at this man making this weak case against President Trump. using all kinds of resources. And then they're sitting there thinking, my gosh, you know, that fellow at the bodega who was attacked by that young man was thrown in jail for trying to defend himself. These people who are in that grand jury, they live in New York. They know how unsafe it is. And it's unsafe in large part because of this man. So, I mean, he probably doesn't have a lot of credibility with a grand jury, Bill.
I would hope not. I mean, I hope what you're saying turns out to be accurate because, you know, you mentioned before there are so many international problems facing us.
Yes.
That I said the same thing. I don't recall a time when there have been so many at the same time. The morale in the country is very low. There's a feeling that we are failing as a nation, that the wrong people are getting into office. This reparations thing in California is an absolute disgrace, and it may go through. Now there's a demand by radicals that the governor not even wait for the legislature to do it,
right.
To just do it himself. I didn't think governors had the right to spend tens or hundreds of billions of dollars just because they feel like it. But it's I mean, you have states like California, like New York, which are out-migration states. People are leaving in droves. We yearn for a little bit of good news or even a little bit of neutral news. I was saying to my wife, it is getting harder and harder to find good, important, interesting, well-written news stories.
No, you're right. You're right. I mean, it's the only good news I can think of before we take a break, Bill. The only good news that I can think of is that the baseball season starts in a few days. That at least is good news for those of us who like the game. But other than that, you're right. It's tough to find good news. Let me take a little break. I do want to talk about foreign policy with you in a second. So we'll be right back with our friend Bill right after this. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, chatting with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, before we get to foreign policy, I got a couple of quick things I wanted to mention. Senator Fetterman continues to be in the hospital. We wish him the best. I want to make sure that's clear. We wish him the best. I think it was a mistake that he ran in that condition, but, you know, the people elected him. But now he's been out for quite some time, and there's a lot of people wondering, I mean, is he ever going to get out of the hospital, Bill? This is not good for the people of Pennsylvania, and it's not good for the Democrats either because, you know, with him being out and Senator Feinstein, I guess, out too, she's been ill, they don't technically have a majority, Bill.
No, they don't, and I think they're beginning to worry about it. Look, something we have to address. It won't be addressed because it's the kind of subject that's only addressed when there's a crisis. But there has to be some minimal physical standard for high public officials. There really does. I think I cannot see having another Joe Biden in the White House who is so obviously impaired. Now, he may not be impaired enough to not do the job, but I want to know more. I mean, you know, we moved in 1944 from the Democratic ticket. I shouldn't say we, the Democratic Party, the sitting vice president of the United States, because, one, they felt he had gone too far to the left and that would be a serious problem. They believed that President Roosevelt would not survive. How did they know he wouldn't survive? They didn't get a doctor's note the way the people want today. They just looked at him. They said he had the look of death, and they said this man will not survive a new term, and the sitting vice president should not be president. And they went out and they picked Harry Truman to run in 1944 with Roosevelt for Roosevelt's fourth term. And sure enough, Harry Truman was inaugurated as vice president on January 20th, 1945, and only a few months later, April 12th, President Roosevelt died, and Truman became president. So the cautions that these men engaged in, looking at the president and saying he is not going to survive, we need a new vice president, turned out to be very wise and very much of the national interest.
Yeah.
And that is something we need today. Somebody has to step forward and finally say, we cannot have a man in the White House who drifts off. We cannot have United States senators who are, for goodness sake, the man could not go to engage in a debate for his Senate seat. Because
right.
he is so incoherent, and I feel sorry for him. He's a man who has a very serious illness. But a United States senator represents a state. It's an important job. When are the people going to be put first?
Well, that's it. And you would think, I know the governor is a Democrat there and so on, but you would think there would be, like as you indicated in the example of Harry Truman, where people knew that there was a problem and they fixed it by putting Truman in. And I think here the governor should maybe speak to the senator's wife and say, you know what, your husband really needs to take some time off and take care of himself. Let's have him resign, and we'll put somebody else in there who can do the job. I mean, it's going to be a Democrat because you'll nominate him, but at least you don't have this situation where a senator, you know, is in a hospital. All they tell us is, oh, he's recovering. He's going to be out there soon. Well, the poor man, Bill, has been in the hospital for practically since he was sworn in, and that would have been 2.5 months ago. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen him even give a speech on the Senate floor, Bill.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, I guess this has happened before. I mean, I don't know. I don't follow every race, but I'm sure that because of the presence of political machines, they have been able to put people in office who could, you know, who are barely alive, simply by using the weight of the machine. But it is something that we ought to look at. We certainly should look at it on the presidential and vice presidential level. I mean, we insist on physical examinations for high-ranking military officers. We should insist on it for, if not for the entire Congress, but certainly for the people who are key to certain very critical committees, like Armed Services and Foreign Relations. And we're not doing the job. We really are not doing the job.
Well, and in this case, Bill, in the past there have been senators who had a stroke and were out. I don't know all their names, but I've heard it has happened before. But in this particular case, without him, the Democrats have 50 votes. And if you throw in Joe Manchin, who every day sounds more and more like he doesn't want to vote with the Democrats, they really got down to 49.
Yes.
They're really down to 49. So, you know, the majority that they technically have, they don't really have. So if you're a Democrat, you want to make sure that you've got your full squad on the field so that they can, in fact, do whatever they have to do. Before we get to foreign policy, though, I wanted to bring up a quick point here. Trump versus DeSantis. Trump was in town or in Texas at the Waco rally. I guess it went pretty well, but the attacks on DeSantis didn't. A lot of people...
No, they didn't, no.
And I didn't like him. I personally did not like him. Now, DeSantis, on the other hand, just got school choice through, so that's a big plus for him. That's a big plus for his campaign. But here's what I'm hearing, Bill. I don't know if you're hearing the same thing, that the strategy on the part of Governor DeSantis is just basically sit back and do nothing and let him just attack you, and ignore him, basically. And he doesn't have to fight back. He's not officially running anyway, Bill. So he can wait 3 or 4 months and see where we are, because he's not officially a candidate anyway, Bill. So that, but it does wear out. I mean, it wears me out to see President Trump or former President Trump attacking a fellow Republican in that way. I don't like it, and I don't think a lot of people in Waco liked it either, Bill.
No, and apparently, according to at least some of the things I've read, DeSantis is now reconsidering the way he's going about the campaign. He may make his announcement earlier, or at least act like a presidential candidate earlier, that you can't just sit there and take the blows, because they have an effect. He has slipped in the polls, DeSantis, and Trump has risen in the polls, and that's not the way it was supposed to be.
Right.
You're right that in Waco, when Trump attacked DeSantis, the crowd did not react. There's that old 11th commandment that Ronald Reagan invented.
Right.
that thou shalt not speak evil of any other Republican. The Republican Party has had this problem before of people attacking each other, of the party being divided, and it has never helped the party. And I think it would be wise if Mr. Trump really wants to run for president, and I'm not at all sure that his campaign will continue to the end. I think a lot depends on his legal status, but that he has got to learn to show respect for other members of the party. The reason that he's not a shoo-in, even with the country in the kind of shape it's in, is that there are many people who really seriously dislike him. They dislike him as a person, and they're not going to change. People
right.
who really dislike Trump will continue to dislike him, especially if he continues to act the way he has, these vicious attacks and giving people nicknames like a little children's game. He's already been president. He should act like a man who's been president.
Well, not only that, Bill, I agree with you 100% on that. He has a record to run on. And
yes.
this is what, you know, what I find frustrating, because he doesn't really have to make up anything. He can just talk about his record. I mean, the fact is that if you're watching him and he says gasoline was cheaper, well, gasoline was cheaper. If you follow him and he says inflation was low, inflation was. I mean, he's got a record, an unbelievable record. And we're going to talk about foreign policy in a second, but on foreign policy, he has a record too. When he was president, Putin didn't go into Ukraine. When he was president, China wasn't running around Latin America like a couple in their honeymoon. I mean, when he was president, Israel and the Arab countries were doing these Abraham Accords. Abraham Accords. I mean, the fact is that the world was seemed a lot safer to me, Bill. And now you throw in this situation with Mexico, where the Mexican president is really acting out a lot of frustration against Biden. I mean, you don't have to call anybody any names. All you got to do is remind people of what you did, Bill.
That's exactly right. He should talk about his record. He did a little bit, but he seems to fear any competition in the party. What he should say is, if a man wants to run for president, we welcome him to the race, and then let the best man win. My fear is that he will get the nomination and lose the election, and because he's been president, people who have an opinion of him, their opinion has been set in time. I mean, it's already there. He doesn't have to introduce himself to the American people, and for a man who's been president, running against a president with a very low approval rating, you'd think he'd be doing better in the polls. And I think the reason he's not doing better in the polls is he personally. It's the person of Donald Trump. And he will have the whole press against him. If he has any legal charges still pending, that will be used against him. And I think what should be a shoo-in election for the Republicans can turn out to be another nightmare.
No, you're right. And I think the important thing about 2024 is that, look, the judges are getting older, and, you know, I think Clarence Thomas, for example, is, what, in his mid-80s? I mean, he's in good health, thank God, but at some point he'll want to move on, and I want to make sure that there's a Republican president in the White House and a Republican Senate that can approve the right candidates. And look, President Trump did a tremendous job with the Supreme Court. That's another thing
yes.
that nobody talks about. He did a great job. I just wish that Trump would talk more in terms of, like you say, hey, you want to run? Come in. Let's have a debate. Instead of, you know, these silly attacks about how DeSantis came to him crying for his support. I mean, come on. That doesn't. I don't believe that, Bill. I don't think DeSantis is the kind of man who would go crying to somebody for support. So
I agree.
And if you look at DeSantis and his record, well, he just passed school choice today. That's a pretty big deal. That's a big trophy on the wall for DeSantis.
One of the most popular causes in the country.
That's right. That's right. So, I mean, I think the guy's doing a great job. Now, there is an argument that maybe he's too young or doesn't have enough foreign policy experience. On the other hand, maybe Trump is too old, because he'll be 78, 79 by the time he takes over. Maybe the combination of Trump and DeSantis would be the perfect combination. I don't know. That sounds like a pretty good deal to me, those two. But Trump has got to change his act. I don't think it's playing as well as it used to, Bill.
No, I don't think it is at all. And also remember, we're not sure of who the Democratic ticket will be. It has to be brought up that Mr. I'm about to sneeze. That's right. It went away. That excuse me. That Joe Biden may not live. I mean, it has to be confronted. He's a very old man and seems frail. If he does not make it to 2024 or something happens, who will the Democratic candidate for president be? Can
right.
they deny it to Kamala Harris? You know,
well,
she'll be
president if Biden
yes.
steps aside. She's
yes.
president, so she's got the title. She'd be running as the incumbent, so, I mean, it's kind of hard to deny the incumbent the job, I guess. They would be very difficult. Plus, you've got the other dynamics, too, of course, of the race and the gender. That's another issue, too. But let's talk a little bit about foreign policy. This is a time when I mentioned sometime in the podcast today that I don't remember this much craziness. Frankly, I got to go back to 1980 when you had the Russians going or the Soviets going into Afghanistan, where you had Cuban troops fighting in Africa, basically proxy wars for the Soviets. You had Central America was a mess. I mean, it just seemed like Iran was a mess. It seemed like every time you would open the newspaper back then, we didn't have internet, you open the newspaper and there was another foreign policy crisis. And in the middle of all of this was a very nice man named Jimmy Carter, who we wish him well, of course.
Yeah.
But, you know, you didn't feel very safe about what was going on. You felt like a lot of people today who don't feel very comfortable with the leadership of President Biden. We didn't feel very comfortable with the leadership of President Carter back then. You know, I remember all of that quite well, 1980. That's what it's starting to feel like, for me at least, Bill.
Well, I'm afraid you're right. We are facing in foreign policy the following crises all at the same time. We are facing a crisis with Iran, which is within, now we even admitted in Washington, within weeks of being able to build an atomic bomb. We are facing a crisis in the Ukraine, which is a direct invasion, something we never thought would happen again in Europe, a land war in Europe, and one that is being fought with traditional weapons, and one that does not show any sign of cooling down. That's two. We are facing a crisis with China over Taiwan, and that I think is probably the most explosive, because China could start a war tomorrow over Taiwan. I'm not so sure we have a policy to deal with it. If we don't help the Taiwanese resist, we will lose all our influence in that part of Asia, Eastern Asia, because people will see us as a paper tiger. Strength is important. If we do participate in the defense of Taiwan, in what way do we participate? Will it be with weapons only, or will American manpower be required? Then we are involved in another war. That's the third crisis we're involved in. And the fourth crisis, of course, is North Korea. They are getting more and more powerful with their weapons development program. They have long-range missiles. They have the atomic bomb. Nothing seems to have worked with them. And one of the questions we have to ask, if there is a crisis with China, will North Korea immediately come in and help the Chinese?
Right.
North Korea is a fairly advanced country in technology. So we are in a real mess. We can add to that the fact that China is expanding its influence all over the world, especially Latin America. Now, this is something
yes.
I was not aware of, that they have now established essentially commercial bases in much of Latin America. They've established commercial bases in Africa. They are moving relentlessly ahead, and I'm not so sure we have any strategy to deal with them, because we are also involved financially with China, and a lot of very powerful Americans are involved. And it may be that they will just naturally become the most influential country in the world, and there won't be much we can do about it.
Well, China and Latin America, I think in the last couple of days, Honduras, now that's a small country in Central America, but this is significant, they broke diplomatic relations with Taiwan. And
yes.
they're aligning themselves with China now. Again, that's not a big country. Most people probably don't even know where Honduras is, but it's in Central America, important region. And what it really shows me, Bill, is that the Chinese are going around basically buying influence. They're going to a country
yes.
and they say, look, we can become your provider of cash, and but, you know, you're going to deal with us. And that's a scary thing, particularly on this side of the continent. But you do have the Iranian Navy negotiating, you know, ports in South America for stops, you know, so that they can come in and stop here and stop there. The Chinese, I said Iranian, I meant the Chinese Navy, developing these relationships. You know, that's how you become a world power. When you can project your power all over the world, Bill.
Absolutely. And the Chinese Navy is now much larger than ours and getting larger by the day. We are actually cutting the number of warships that we will have. We are having recruitment problems for the armed forces.
Yes.
Due in part to this whole woke craziness. Who wants to go into a Navy that's woke?
Right.
You know, and we also are a country that is, according to a recent survey, less patriotic than before, less devoted to the national interest, and a country that is poorly led. I think there is a great deal to worry about the American future.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's why I said that it reminds me of 1980. Now, Jimmy Carter, you know, was maybe a different person than Joe Biden. I don't know. But some of the same things were being said back then. The country, the spirit is gone. The country is frustrated. A lot of the same stuff that was being said back then that people are saying now. Here's a couple more things I wanted to bring up, Bill. I heard this, I don't know if you have, that if we have to get into a war, that we may be providing so much equipment and ammunition to Ukraine that we may not have our own.
That's right.
Could run out. That's frightening if that's true, Bill.
It is frightening, and apparently not much is being done about it. I mean, we have a supply level that we're supposed to maintain. I don't know what the standard is today. At one time, the standard was we should be able to fight two wars at the same time. I don't know if that standard has been maintained. We seem to have great difficulty developing new aircraft in a reasonable period of time and at a reasonable price. I don't know how many troops are available to any American president who are really fully trained. And the Pentagon has been involved in all this sociological stuff, this woke stuff, and it is taking attention away from war fighting, which is the main job of the Department of Defense. So I think that, you know, an enemy nation looking at America right now might say, now is a good time to strike.
Right.
If
China and Taiwan, for sure.
Of course. And
I mean, China
looks
at us right now and say, you know, this is maybe the best time to go into Taiwan.
Exactly. And if you look at Iran, what do they have to fear from us? We've let them go through one barrier after another in developing an atomic bomb. It's now conceded that they're going to have one. And even had we stayed in the nuclear treaty, they would have it because they've invested so much in it already. They're not going to let a little treaty or agreement get in their way. They will have the atomic bomb. North Korea has proven to be completely rigid. Here is a case where Trump did not succeed through no fault of his own. And we know that they are a nuclear-equipped country, and they seem to have no fear of the United States. So you have Iran and North Korea having no fear of the United States. China seems to go about its merry way, again, almost ignoring us. I mean, literally almost ignoring us. They don't seem to have much of a fear of the United States. And you wonder how in the world we can even have an effective policy if nobody fears us.
Right. Well, and the problem with recruiting, Bill, that's a serious problem. Because
We
have a volunteer army. I guess we could always issue a draft notice and get people to, you know, if we need soldiers, we have to draft them, I guess. That would be awfully unpopular, I would think, and awfully difficult to pull off, too. So, it's complicated. The other big problem, too, Bill, is Mexico. Mexico is becoming more and more of a problem because of the cartels and the violence and the apparent unwillingness of of this administration to do something, or at least sit down with Mexico and say, hey, we need you to work with us on this border problem. The president of Mexico is criticizing the State Department for issuing travel warnings. He says it's all political on the part of Republicans who want to hurt his country. I mean, he's really gone nutty. And apparently nobody at the White House is doing anything about it, Bill, as is the case with everything else.
Well, that is the case. I mean, look, I don't want the State Department to take over foreign policy. I think it should be in the White House, because the State Department is its own world. And our Secretary of State seems to be a decent guy. I don't know if he's effective. He doesn't seem to be all that effective. Secretary of Defense also seems to be a decent guy, was a general. But he takes orders from other people. And what really frightens me about foreign policy is that the people who seem to have the power in this administration are the Obama people. You still have Susan Rice in the White House, as she was before during the Obama administration. You have several others from the Obama crowd. And the Obama crowd is an appeasement-minded group. They are not great believers in a strong national defense. And
no.
So we just can't seem to get ourselves out of the bucket that we're in. And I don't know. This was said in the 1970s also, that the country was in a malaise. Even Jimmy Carter used that word. I think that's happening again. And what is needed is a new Ronald Reagan, and we don't have a new Ronald Reagan.
No, we don't. You would think maybe DeSantis could grow into that, or even Trump, I guess, with a slight personality change. But yeah, it's a problem. We're in a very difficult time. Well, Bill, as always, thank you so much for your time, for joining us today. I do want to pass this little quick bit of information that I just came across the iPhone, and that is that the shooter in Tennessee was apparently a former student of the school. That apparently, she's 28 years old, so it must have been a while back that she was a former student. So I don't know how that connects. I don't know why a former student would do what she did, especially, you know, many, many years later. But that information did come across, that they've identified her as a former student, which I'm sure has to be even more frustrating for the parents who lost three kids today. Little kids, Bill. That's the tragedy.
That's right. Little children.
I mean, just little children. That's absolutely, absolutely horrible. Well, Bill, have a great week. We'll keep checking with you on Urgent Agenda to get foreign policy updates. And you have a great week, and thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. I look forward to the next broadcast.
Thank you so much. Our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. It's a crazy world out there. Crazy world out there. And we're trying to keep up with it. That's all we can do. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.